Oh my God.
And it was like at a time when like there weren't a lot of cases in the United States, but it was like starting to become a problem, like where like now states all over the United States were like reporting their own cases, and it wasn't just like the PNW, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like for that to happen, that was like the morning after is when I came back to Seattle. And my wife had been like sent home from work, like they weren't like allowing people into the office anymore, like as of like that weekend. And literally ever since that day, I have not yet been back to a normal society. We were on tour, hitting the road at warp speed, having a grand old time, and then all of a sudden we come home to a pandemic, and it literally has never gone back to normal. It's been this entire time. It's been a year and a half since that day. And it's so surreal to me because like a tour on its own feels like a life-altering experience. Mm-hmm. Because you're basically like just like jet setting all over the place, and you're performing to people and like making friends, and you're staying up late and doing all this crazy stuff, things that you wouldn't normally do as an adult, right? And then all of a sudden going to this whole other first-time life experience, which is basically being in solitary in your own home. Solitary confinement on your couch for a year.
Yeah,
it's a weird thing.
No, it's been like a crazy dream. It has felt like a mental fog, but yeah. So you were the last show that I saw live, and then you were the first that I saw when we came back.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You bookended my pandemic.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. It was pretty awesome because there was actually quite a few people in the audience that were at their last concert was my show on tour in 2020 in February. Oh, yeah. And you were one of those people, right? Where it's like, I remember, yeah. And like you mentioned, it was on my birthday, right? So I got to celebrate my birthday, like playing with awesome artists and, you know, seeing my friends and, you know, hanging out with local people who like synth music. That was cool. And I remember just thinking like, wow, half of the people here, I was their last show, like no joke. Mm-hmm. And here we are again. And so as I was on stage and I actually like relayed that message and I said, hey, like I remember a lot of you guys were here last time and like the world came to an end and now here we are. Look at us now. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, my wife brought like cookies to the show, which is like hilarious. I don't know why. Yeah. Now I know why. It's because it was my birthday. That's right. Oh yeah. She asked for neon colors and the cake maker basically only had like baby blue and baby pink. So it was like, it looked like we were having like a gender reveal party.
You add a little yellow, make it pop a little bit.
Make it pop a little bit. Add a little neon.
Half a year into this quarantine, people starting to change. I could see the darkness and the loneliness setting into people's hearts. People had nowhere to go. For a lot of us, they had no one. No one to love. No one to love them back. And then we saw in the news a bunch of people in our community getting killed by the police. The ones who were supposed to protect us. And instead of getting justice, they got off. Set the world on fire. It was as if a war had started in our streets. I could hear the explosions in the night out my window. I could see the people. I could see the people marching right outside my door. And they didn't let up. Couldn't believe what I was seeing.
So we touched on the optimism section of 2019 and then the dreams to nightmares section going into 2020.
Yeah.
I love those little talking segments that you put in.
Oh, yeah. Those like spoken word sections.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what's funny about that is that like I write hundreds, I feel like, of little like musical snippets all the time, just because like you never know what's going to turn into a good idea. And so I had all of these like partially written songs on my hard drive. And I think if I hadn't like used them for this, I probably would have either never finished them or I would have released them under a different artist name. But because I was using them almost like a backing track to like the news in a way, they sounded like perfect elevator music in the current state that they were in. And so, yeah, those all could have been user songs if I hadn't, you know, under different circumstances.
That's cool. Yeah, I was listening through it and I was like, he's telling this whole story. What am I going to say during the interview? Because it's all here, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's something. Like, it's hard to know if putting spoken word sections into your album is gonna be bad. Like, are people gonna like it? Like, I had somebody tell me that they thought the album was stronger without any of those spoken word sections. They're like, yeah, you should just not include it. And I'm just
a lot of people that don't even like singing, so.
And and I was thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, well, I love my album. And I think it's, like, an important thing that the story gets told in a certain way, and no, I'm not going to remove that. It's like part of the DNA of this record. That's why it's unique. And it's one of those things where, like, you know, as an artist, you don't know, like, you got to lead with your own taste in music, because that's basically what your music is. It's just like a collection of your tastes, right? But sometimes you have to self-edit in the sense that, like, you know that what you love is not going to be what other people love. And so I had a lot of heartburn about whether or not I would even do the speaking parts, but I think it was fine in the end.
I like it. I like it. It really paints the picture. And you really have to listen to, you know, the album as a whole. Like, I know we're kind of picking through tracks out of order tonight, but...
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting because I think you can actually listen to it out of order because a lot of these songs were released initially as singles. And so they do work. The only thing is, like, the story doesn't make sense unless you listen to it in order.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the songs individually are fine, yeah.
That's the beauty of an album.
Oh, yeah. That's so, so interesting about albums. Who knows? Maybe albums will go away someday. Like, they keep telling us that singles are where it's at.
I don't know. I mean, there's always going to be the connoisseurs who still want physical albums, you know, and you have to decide what goes on that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So let me ask you a question. Like, would you say that the music that you have heard from our community in the last year and a half has been colored by the events around them, maybe directly or indirectly? Like, have you noticed a shift in tone from the music you've gotten?
Yeah. I mean, in some cases it's more apparent. Like, I don't know if it has anything to do with the pandemic, but Wolftron started a new cyberpunk project called Defender 5. And a lot of people are going cyberpunk. I feel like Zenon's doing that. They're not local, but Ace Buchanan was doing that. And that's definitely a darker shift for those artists. Your album, of course, the one that Hideo Tronic put out, it was a little dark, but it wasn't really pandemic dark.
Was it like the Lonely Together album? The one that he put out, there was like 16 tracks on it or something?
Yeah, Together Forever Alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because I have a friend, a Seattle artist friend that I've played with a couple times. They're a hip hop duo and they're called Lonely Together.
Uh-huh.
And so I always get them crossed in my mind because I can't unthink it. But yeah, Hideo Tronic is an excellent artist. And he's like got a really good eye for like nice, crisp, clear recordings. Like I shouldn't say he has a good eye for it. He has a good ear for it. Like whenever I hear stuff, it sounds like very professional and very polished. And so I think he's a good songwriter and I would love to play with him sometime. I think, you know, I've met a few artists over the last couple of years in Seattle that are just like really inspiring in their ability to write a good song. And yeah, I want to keep kind of growing the scene a little bit. Like, you know, like to your point about cyberpunk, like cyberpunk is, in my opinion, basically just EDM, right?
Yeah.
Because like, if you think about like, what is like the original cyberpunk? Like, I don't know, Kraftwerk or yeah. like, Daft Punk or something, and then you got like Justice and you have like artists like Rez or like, you know, what is it, like 1877L or whatever they're called, you know, those types of artists, or Deadmau5, right? Like, it's like if you have a couple more zap sounds and a couple more squelchy synths, like you're dangerously close to getting to dubstep or dangerously close to getting to like deep house or just like raw EDM. But if you do it with like an old 70s snare drum and you keep it up tempo, it sounds a little bit disco, right? And it's like, now you got Justice. And that, you know what I'm saying? So I feel like cyberpunk, like to me, doesn't really mean a lot because like it's so many things that already have a name. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I actually like adore that sound. I love the sound of like heavy, energetic electronica. Like I feel like that's like one of my guilty pleasures. I love just like cranking Rez or those types of artists and just like melting my face off.
I love doing that too. I try to do my shows sort of starting in the more synth pop, city pop, and then I move like through. I try to alternate with vocals, but
yeah,
towards the end it gets harder and harder, and there's less, you know, singing on top of that. Maybe Sarina.
yeah she's then, in there. So Sarina's interesting. Her like music is has got kind of a goth vibe to it.
Yeah,
that's cool. I'm into that. The my blackened heart, it appeals to my blackened heart. That's what I was trying to say.
That and her videos, my goodness.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, it's really interesting because like she talks about like her like background in fashion and those types of things. And I think what's cool about that is like there are some industries out there that are just like already deeply intertwined with like, you know, audiovisual. And I feel like fashion and media are very much an audiovisual type of game. And, you know, because think about like the role that advertising plays in those products, right? It's just so important, so central. And so if you did that professionally and you're around like world-class photographers and things all the time, like it makes sense to me like that's something that she has a good eye for. Mm-hmm. She should, you know what I mean? Like if she had that awesome career, like she should be this good at doing this type of stuff, because that is exactly like what that industry excels at, is making impactful visuals. So it's really exciting to see somebody kind of like leverage their background to do things. Like for me, I work in tech, right? And so one of the things that I like doing is trying to use my tech background or my tech skills to kind of like write a song. And so like, for instance, when I wrote this on Colors, I used neural networks and AI to try to write the lyrics. Like
so that's, interesting.
You know what I mean? Like it's because like I feel like that's what I do for work. I might as well like try to make that my legacy as an artist, but it's hard to do, but it's unique, right?
What exactly does that entail, getting an AI to write a song for you?
Well, training data, modeling, and then inputs and outputs, right? So it's like, imagine if...
How big a can of worms did I just open?
Well, I'll just keep it super high level. It's like in order for me to have a conversation with you in English, first you must learn English, right? Mm-hmm. And so like, in order to teach you English, I have to give you lots of examples of English, right? Sentences, mm-hmm. words, misspellings, correct spellings. Just I have to like show you what this language looks like and like show you what things mean. And then after a while, you have learned English or some version of English. And therefore it's like good enough to where you can now have like a decent conversation, right? Maybe you start off like talking at like a seventh grade level, but with enough information, enough learning, you can become an expert in English. And now all of a sudden you're teaching English, right? So that's like AI in a nutshell, is inputting lots of training data, i.e. lyrics, building models that basically predict like what types of phrases and words go with each other, tend to go with each other, given the data sets that have been provided. And then once you've like built that model, now you can talk to the model. Like, I'm going to give you a word or a phrase and you give me back a song in response, right? Mm. And so the word that I used was colors.
Okay.
And in response, I got those lyrics. And you know what's funny about those lyrics is that they almost sound human, but they're a little bit weird. Because of you, I touch the color of the sky. Like, I would never write a lyric like that. Like, yeah. But, you know, that's the whole like shtick is that the uncanny valley is a phrase that refers to the weirdness that is in like robotics and in like computing. Like basically, if you had a robot that looked like a human being, there's usually some kind of minor detail that'll give it away that it's not real. And that is like that little sliver of weirdness is so difficult to overcome that in itself is like a huge valley to cross, right? You can do all these things to get yourself up to the line, but that last sliver is like a valley. It's so hard to cross. And that's why they call it the weird valley. They call it the uncanny valley, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's like elements of the uncanny valley in the song Colors, because it was written by a computer. Mm-hmm. And I would never write words like that.
It reminded me of like when somebody who might not necessarily speak English is writing their first song in English.
Yeah. That's actually like probably about as good of an analogy as you could have, because the reason why it's challenging for them is because they haven't gotten enough training with English yet. Mm. Right. And if they had more, then it would be easier and they would say more natural things. But like, since they don't have that experience, some of the things they say sounds less natural. And that's exactly the situation here as well.
Yeah. That's that is so fascinating. Because of you, I touch the color of the sky. How long do you spend on that program?
That project lasted several months.
Okay.
But I will say that it probably would have gone faster if like the world wasn't coming to an end during that time.
Right.
It's like the whole like the stress of the world coming to an end seemingly is actually quite a burden on the creative process, because you feel like nothing you do is worth spending any time and energy on it. You're like, what does it all mean? Like, who cares about this song? Nobody cares, you know? And then you basically sit on an idea forever and you don't really advance your projects. And that's at least the sensation I felt for a good 9 months.
Yeah. It's just, it's such a mistake to think about what everybody is going to think or feel, because we're all a bunch of individuals. And
we're all a bunch of dumbasses just falling through life doing dumb things.
Yeah. But I mean, the truth is some people won't care. But also the other truth is that a lot of people will.
Yeah.
And, you know, do it for yourself and do it for, well, I mean, only do it for yourself, but if you've got fans, do it for them too.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting, because like, what does it mean to be a fan in this day and age? Like, I don't even know, but it is really awesome. Like every once in a while, I'll get like a message from somebody who like felt like analyzing something I did, or like wanted to give feedback about something I did. And I didn't know that they felt that way. And that's so exciting. Like one time, you know, remember that my song Chemistry, that old like sad song from my first record? Well, like somebody once I remember us standing in a Pizza Mart, like having pizza and beers with friends, and somebody sent me a message on Twitter saying like, the song Chemistry is like putting words to the feelings that I've had about my depression, and like, you're really helping me get through this. And if you don't know that song, Chemistry is about me having a serious allergic reaction and almost dying, right? And so that song is not about depression, but it's about death and mortality, right? And so like, when you hear it, like depending on the lens that you're experiencing that song through, like it may mean something different to you, right? So yeah, every once in a while somebody will say something and you're like, fucking hell, man, like that's crazy that like, you know, you made an impact on somebody and you don't even think about it, you know?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I just aired that song last week.
You're an angel.
Yeah, on that day that I was like, I'm not doing the new stuff today, it's time to, you know, we need to step back and go look at the stuff OG. That's yeah.
That actually would be a fun game, is to only play things that are like more than a year old or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was going for, at least, you know, not 2021 right now. Let's go back. And because I feel like you artists put things out and then everyone hypes it around release time, and then what? And then they're on to the next new thing. It's like, well, I still enjoy things. I still try to pull things out.
Yeah.
Keep people in the rotation. But with all the submissions and the new releases, I feel like I try not to go over 2 hours, and I have, you know.
Well, you know, that's what's crazy is that like, it feels good to make an album that's cohesive, but like the way that like social media and like the industry, the music industry has changed, like it's like you have to like constantly be putting these little seeds out into the patch, you know, like over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so it like, I feel like it causes people to prioritize frequency of releases over depth of thought. Like, you know what I mean? Like it takes a lot of thinking and a lot of feeling to kind of like make something carefully. And I'm not saying that you can't write a good song quickly, don't get me wrong. But I'm just saying that like, I feel like a lot of things are now just like, oh, I have to get my new single out for the month. Otherwise, I'm like not checking the boxes that this marketing YouTube tutorial taught me.
Yeah, slacking on my grind.
And now I'm not going to make it as an artist because I didn't follow the rule about monthly releases or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't put out another one this month, then Spotify editorial playlist will never pick me up and I'm going to be a failure. You know, like that kind of shit, right? And what it does is it causes people to like not invest as much of themselves into a work because like they feel like, you know, just getting it out is more important than like having something that they feel really good about.
Yeah, no, I've heard that, and I try to encourage people to take as much time as you need. If you're not feeling it for a year, take another year, you know?
Yeah. You know, the thing that's scary though is that the tectonic plates shift like under us in music, right? So like, for instance, like I've seen almost like this kind of like reckoning with like synthwave, almost where like the big names in synthwave are starting to be a little bit cynical, and people who used to curate now are kind of throwing in the towel and things like that. You know, like Stranger Things happened and then it went away.
Yeah.
Dua Lipa did a thing, The Weeknd did a thing, now they're kind of like doing whatever they're doing now. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, regardless of what we love, the tectonic plates will shift. Mm-hmm. And we'll be lucky if they shift in a direction that we are still relevant. But it's one of those things where like, this is why you have to zoom out a little bit and just do things that feels good for you and like draws on all of your inspirations and is not just imitating. And the reason why is because like, you know, you might get short-term gain from sounding like something that is desired at that time, but you know, after a while our beauty fades away, right? The music, the genres and the pop culture interest and things like this, they shift onto other things. And so like the only thing that's left for it now is its merit as a work of its own, right? And so it's really interesting just kind of like how that has such a profound impact on what people tend to try to rush to make.
Yeah, I wonder if they ever wonder what they could have done with more time or attention.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like if genres were not a thing, just like political parties were not a thing, what would people actually feel? What would be their positions on things? What would they feel, right? Because like so many times, like we have these like broad categories of things, and it's so comfortable for us to just belong to a category that we don't think and feel so much for ourselves, right? And it's like, I think it's like a comfort thing, like a defense mechanism or something. But like, music is like that. Like, if you weren't worried about not having an audience, I'm the same way. I worry about that sometimes. Like, what would you really write? Like, what were the 10 influential, most influential albums of your entire life, or the top 100? And wouldn't your music just be a collection of all of those moments, the best things that you loved about what you had heard growing up? That's how I kind of like write sounds, is like, I think about, oh my god, I love that Herbie Hancock like vocoder record. I love that. I love the way that like Diana Krall kind of like whispers on the mic. I love how Daft Punk like didn't over compress their drums. I love the insanity of, you know, Zappa, and I love like the just pure songwriting genius of the Beatles. And there's moments throughout all of those songs where I'm just like, I love that 2 seconds worth of stuff, or I love that chord change, and I'm just gonna try to do something as an homage to that because I love it. And the next thing you know, your whole song is just moments of things that you love, and you found a way to like cleverly weave them together and like make your own little piece of work out of it. And isn't that just songwriting in a nutshell, right?
Yeah, you know, that's very similar to what Hideo Tronic said. I asked him, because he likes these pop hooks, which I admit I'm like a sucker for. They just stick in my head. Like, where do you get these? He's like, yeah, I just hear things I like and I use them.
Yeah, I mean, that's simple. It is that simple. Yeah, well, it's actually interesting. It's like, think about all, but just think about what that means, though. There's actually a lot of music makers out there who don't really listen to music. Isn't that interesting?
I've noticed some of the things I've heard sound like, what do you listen to? Anything? And I've had some people admit that they only listen to themselves. I'm like, why?
Or just like, you know, they'll like your one artist that vibes with them, and then they basically just try to replicate that artist. Like, that happens too, right?
Yeah, yeah. In this scene, especially. Yeah.
I mean, I think this happens in every genre, really. You know?
Yeah, probably.
You know, it's kind of funny is that I have like this huge like admiration for like psychedelic rock music. Like, I came from a rock and roll background, and my parents, you know, played rock music. And so I actually started writing songs recently under this kind of like other thing. I don't have a name for it, but I started writing like basically like psychedelic indie rock music. And it just feels so fun to just like, you know, like to be able to drown your vocal out, and like, you don't have to know what the words are. It just sounds like something. It sounds phonetic, you know? And to like put just lots of random chord changes in, and to just sit down with an actual bass and an actual guitar and just like record moments and just kind of string them together. Like, it's such a different process than what I've been doing as user for the last few years, which is basically programming. It's akin to like building an app, you know, like that's what it feels like. So you're coding your music in a way. And it just felt really refreshing to just be able to like sit down for like 2 hours and just put together like something that felt alive and was also really fun. So I don't know, you might hear more of that someday.
Awesome. So was that a lot of guitar playing?
That particular song didn't have guitar in it, but I was playing my bass a lot on that song. So I have obviously lots of instruments laying around my house, but bass and drums and things like that, just real sounding things, which is cool.
That would be harder to do live, all of that by yourself.
Yeah, that's the other thing is that I've come to realize that, like, unless you're literally a DJ, which is like, you know, you're spinning a pre-recorded thing and you're hitting play, any kind of performance as a solo artist feels slightly disingenuous because they know you can't play all those instruments at the same time. And so what you're basically doing is you're prepping a backing track, you're singing over it, and then maybe you're doing like a lead or like a guitar part on top of it. And like, that can feel a little bit karaoke-ish.
I understand. We really come just to share the energy in the room with you.
That's how I feel about it. Yeah. Always. Like, and as the performer, like sometimes I feel like it's just not, it must not be very interesting for people, right? I would prefer to have a group of people on stage helping recreate some of these moments, and I think that'd be awesome. But you know, it's a lot of effort to like share your vision with someone else and actually get it right. And like, it's difficult to connect with the right people who like have the right skills, and it's, you know, you have to have like good relationships, and just like all of those things are like levels of work on top of the actual writing of the song. Like, I remember when I used to be in like rock bands in high school, we were great about, you know, having band practices. We were great about performing things. We would like noodle and like figure out songs. But the songs, if I'm being honest, the songs were not very like well thought out. And that's because we were kind of thinking of them as we were having band practices. If I had sat down and wrote a song for that, the way that I do for user, and then I just had a band to play it, I feel like the quality of the songwriting is better in that case. But it's just not realistic. That's not how people do that when they're like in person with each other. And so it's like Tame Impala or like Nine Inch Nails. It's like Trent Reznor or like Kevin Parker is like writing a song and then they hire people to go on tour with them. Like that's why their music sounds like so singularly focused. It's because it's not just being noodled about like in a practice room, you know what I mean? And so yeah, that's something that I find to be like a sort of obstacle, like as a smaller artist. Like that's a lot of time and energy and communication and in some cases like money. Like if you're not doing it in a shared vision sort of way, but rather you're hiring somebody, that's like you got to pay them, and that's like that's a thing, man.
You get what you can afford.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I totally understand. But you know, these live shows have been fun. Do you have any others coming up?
Yeah, actually I do. I mean, I just had with Starfarer, I had his like Synth Valley Stream Fest 2 days ago, and
oh yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I actually found a performance space like hidden in Seattle that I rented out, and it was like they built like this giant wall, this like rounded immersive psych wall, which is basically, you know, like if you hung a green screen, but the green screen like wrapped around the whole room and it like didn't have any seams, like that's what a psych wall is.
Cool.
And then I hired Donovan Rosling, who is like a lighting guy from my previous shows, and he brought in his lights and lasers, and then in front of the psych wall we shot 4 different camera feeds of the same performance, and then I used like video effects to like combine all of those feeds and then do like different like blending modes of colors to like make them interact with each other. Like so like some levels of the video would like cause negative image on the other ones, or it would cause crazy color effects and just colliding video footage, which was awesome because, you know, once you put that in front of people, it's as if you have a whole band, which is like really kind of why I thought that was exciting.
Yeah, that was a cool show.
Appreciate that. It was a lot of fun to make.
Are you going to be uploading it to YouTube?
It's already there. Yeah,
it's already there. All right.
Yeah, if you just search for User Live, you'll probably see it. It's all colorful. So that's that show. And then I have another show happening October 15th. They're doing it like a cyberpunk themed show at this hip hop nightclub in Seattle in Pioneer Square. And it's the very first of a series of shows that they are booking. And so I have been given the honor of being the first ever performer in this series of shows, which is going to be super dope. And I am very excited about what I'm going to do at that show, because not only am I going to play like part of my normal set from, you know, with songs from my new album, I'm also going to remix a bunch of famous 90s hip hop music into my own style. And awesome. Just kind of pay homage to the club, because I love old OG like hip hop music. So I'm working on a Notorious B.I.G. remix right now of Hypnotize with like dark synth sounds to it. And then I'm going to do a DMX one. I'm going to do some Missy Elliott, some Busta Rhymes. It's going to be badass. And I'm so excited.
That's so cool. October 15th.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would love for you to come.
I would love to be. Where is it?
It's at a place called Stage Nightclubs in Pioneer Square.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Not far from you.
Oh.
Yeah, it should be dope. Oh. Everybody got a story, I'ma tell you about me. Started up with nothing and nothing come free. Didn't have a dollar to my name. Used to fucking hang my head in shame. I remember this time I was sitting in class, and this girl called me a broke ass. Put a fucking complex in my brain. My life was never the same. Since 10 years to get it off of my chest. Felt stressed every time I got dressed. And my friends are about the same. Old generation growing up in pain. Honestly, I didn't think that I would make it. Already had plans to fake it. You feel like you can't break free. That's why you won't believe what happened to me. Everybody got to reach in here. Excuses and give away if you wanna get it. Stop,
big, you gotta be it. Then I set my ass up on my classes. Did pretty good, not just pass. It's 4 or 5 years and I'm graduated. And they gonna make crash, hope baited. Had to make my cash, do my own business. 3 years later, gotta grip a new skill. Next thing, my phone rings one day. Dude on the line's got something to say. Offer me a job for a lot of cash. My brain couldn't understand that. And the next year it happened again.
So, Dying From Your Love. So here's a funny thing, is that every once in a while, I like see an advertisement that I actually decide to purchase the thing they're selling, right? And they were advertising a songwriting course taught by Charlie Puth. And Charlie Puth is a good songwriter, so I was like, oh, that's really cool. Like, I'll check it out. And so I got the thing. And basically, the way that it works is that they teach like these lessons, and then they have you like write another segment of a song after each lesson. And so by the end of like the 10th lesson, you've written your first song, right?
Cool.
And, you know, I was going through that course and I basically wrote Dying From Your Love, but I wrote it slow, like, dun, blap, blap, ka-bum, blap, you know, just like kind of that kind of mid-tempo kind of feel, right? But it was real funky. And I remember like people in the class were like, damn, like that's a very like complete sounding song. And I'm like, you know, not really revealing that I'm an artist like who actually writes real songs all the time. But but it was really fun because I got to like write it through like the Charlie Puth lens, right? But one of the things that I want for my live shows is to have more dancing people. And so I've been making an effort to write more up-tempo music, right? So I can give them a reason to dance. And so I decided to take that song and recreate it as a house track.
Ooh.
And that's what is on the record.
Wow. So it sounded totally different. That's cool.
Yeah, I'll have to dig it up. I'll send it to you. It's pretty fun. So that's Dying From Your Love. Now, Ballad of the Come Up. This is an interesting song because it is written like a rap song. It's like written like a hip hop song, you know? So like when you listen to hip hop, like what would you say are like some things that are like defining of the hip hop style to you?
The beat.
Okay. What would you say about the way that lyrics are written for rap songs? Like, how do you feel about that?
I guess they flow differently.
They kind of flow differently, and I find that they break the fourth wall a lot, right? They're kind of talking about their actual life a lot, right? Or things that are happening,
mm-hmm.
right? It's less about painting in the abstract, and it's a lot more about like literal storytelling, right? So it's just like you think about Nas or you think about Biggie, like they're telling an actual story about actual people, and it just feels like they're breaking the fourth wall. They're talking to you, right? Mm-hmm. That's not how like a lot of synth music sounds. And when I wrote Ballad of the Come Up, basically I wanted to write a song that had like this really heavy kind of beat to it. And I wanted to have that kind of rhythmic, that jazzy rhythmic kind of like vibe that like rap has over a beat. So it's like when you listen to like Biggie, for instance, it's like, right? He's like basically doing like a rhythmic solo. Like if you did that with a drum, it would be like you're just playing like a drum solo over a downbeat, right? It's very like improvised and it feels exploratory, right? And like that's just like kind of the rhythm that I love about rap music. And so like I